I guess woo-woo.
Woo-woo!
I guess.
I'm trying to figure out exactly what we're doing here.
I hit the wrong button, guys. My bad.
All right.
It's all right. It's okay.
Technical difficulty song. This one suits us better.
Oh, man. Woo-woo! There we go. That's it.
There it is.
We got it. Woo-woo! Now we got it. Thank you, Jorge. Much, much better.
Yay! Woo-woo!
So, LZ, I know that you're going to cover the Dodger game on Thursday. Have you decided? I mean, I know obviously we've got some days to come into and whatever's going to happen, but are you going to write about the game? Or are you going to write about being in an empty spot? Have you decided what you're going to do?
I haven't decided. My process for writing as a columnist is that I really, and I know this drives people crazy that work with me, but I really wait until the last minute before I decide which direction I'm going to go in. You know, I fully am get entrenched in something in the story, and I don't like to decide ahead of time what the angle is going to be. I let the angle present itself. And, you know, I remember when I was doing that piece on Magic Johnson winning his first NBA championship for the LA Times, and I interviewed, as many people as possible. It may have been like 15 people. And it wasn't until the last interview that I had my lead. So I have no idea, Travis, what I'm going to write, what I'm going to see, or how I'm going to feel being there. I just know that I'm just glad baseball is back.
And, oh, no doubt. Goodness gracious.
And I get to see some of the renovations being completed.
Yeah, well, I remember you went and did that tour, you know, as we were getting ready to start spring training, and that just feels like a lifetime ago. So we'll see how that shakes out. We've talked a lot about the NFL today, about the players doing their choreographed tweets over the weekend saying, hey, we want to play, but you got to make sure that it's safe for us. We'll see. We're still waiting to see exactly what it is that they want beyond safe environments. We know that. Everybody can agree that you want to be as safe as possible, but no specifics there. Mark Davis says that he does not want to have fans in, or at least he's leaning that way, not having games or having games without the fans. That seems incredibly likely, but he also is saying, look, if they can't go, I'm not going to go. I thought that was kind of interesting because I would imagine if anybody could go be the owners of these teams, they could probably do what they want, especially in a new new building like that in Las Vegas with Mark Davis. But he says if fans aren't in, I'm not in.
I wish I could feel that, though. I wish I could feel it. I don't feel it from him.
Why not?
I was just going to say, I don't know why. I just have this feeling like, if Jerry Jones were to say it, that would register with me differently. Like, I don't know if Mark Davis is making a statement where he wasn't saying he just decided to make this part of the rationale. Like, I don't know. He just doesn't register for me as an owner. He just so that those words really cut through. Go ahead.
What you're saying about him, I couldn't agree with more, but that's exactly why I do buy it. You know what I mean? Because he doesn't really say much, because when he does talk, you're kind of looking at him like, all right. You know, you just never got the sense that he's playing three-dimensional chess. That he's not particularly outspoken. I make this joke all the time that, you know, prior to Al Davis's death, I didn't know there was a Mark Davis. He just was not on anybody's radar. Like, we know Stephen Jones, right? Stephen Jones has been intimately involved with the Cowboys for a long time. So, you know, when Jerry either steps down or whatever happens and Stephen Jones steps into that role, it's going to feel like, oh, yeah, well, he's been around forever. Mark Davis just kind of showed up one day as the owner of this team. So when he comes out and says something like this, it does kind of hit me right because he doesn't say much, because he is a guy that's not out there talking about every single issue every single time. He's a pretty quiet guy. As far as NFL owners go, he's probably one of the least quoted amongst these guys. That's why this one kind of jumped out at me.
I mean, and as goofy as he looks, what he says is really thoughtful. It's just sometimes a really good message could get clouded by the bad messenger or the wrong messenger or the messenger who's got stuff. And he's got a lot of stuff. So when he says stuff like, you know, I'm not going to go if the fans can't be there, it sounds like a real one. And then you look at him and you think about him like going, yeah, but you're not a real one. So what's happening here? That's right.
Guys, we got breaking news.
Uh-oh.
Black Forest Ramble has been arrested. He has been found
arrested. No!
Yeah, I know. We gave you this story last week. There was a man in Germany who overpowered the police, went into the forest, and after a 5-day manhunt, they could not find him. But finally, LZ, they found him, Travis. I don't know if it was by the water, like you say, hunting, whatever he did, but they have him in custody. He was dressed in camouflage, carrying a bow and arrow. So he made it. We were wondering if he got a weapon. He made a bow and arrow just like we thought. The real Black Forest Ramble does his thing. But he's finally in possession of the police officers right now. So there you go.
I need to understand how they found him.
Mm-hmm.
I need to understand, you know, what was the interaction once they found him.
Right.
I need to understand. But I got questions, man. I got questions. Yeah. Because if you've been able to hide in the forest for that long, do you just give up right away?
I wouldn't I would imagine they've got him in one of those Hannibal Lecter Silence of the Lambs like hand truck with the thing around his face right now. Because this is a guy that if he gets away, you're not getting him again. If he gets into another forest, you may never see him. So they're going to have to keep a pretty close tabs on this dude because he just – keep in mind, it wasn't like a couple of cops were looking for him. They had what was it, Raj? 1,500 cops looking for him?
It was in Germany. It was the entire country. 1,500
cops – and it was 6 days, actually. I'm looking again. It was a 6-day manhunt after he pulled the police on them. Yves Rocks, I think that's how you pronounce it. That's how his mama named him. He's been on the run since last Sunday morning. So, yeah, he was stealing their phone. Oh, man, I'm reading this. So we'll update this as the show goes along this week.
I wonder if he took any bear selfies like that lady in Mexico when he was out there running around in the German forest. Was he like the lady who was on the hike in Mexico who had the bear sneak up behind her and took some selfies with it?
I don't know, but guess
what,
man?
Have you seen his image? Have you seen his picture?
Yes.
Yeah, I might have to turn that in myself. I might have called in.
Apparently, it was a tip-off from two witnesses. He got snitched on, man. People out there snitching on the Black Forest Rambo. Come on, man.
I'm looking at him. I'm looking at him, Raj. I'm looking at him, Travis. I'm like going, yeah, I may have had a call that one in. But I'm looking at him. He got that look.
You see some crazy in his eyes? He got the glasses on.
He's got the glasses. He's got the shaved head. He's got that look on his face, like he's not looking at you like a person. He's looking at you like a target. He does not look. Exactly, he does not look like the most reasonable guy in the world.
I did not know the part about him being snitched on. I just knew I was going to be a snitch if I had stumbled across him in the forest. Because I'm looking and I'm going, yeah, you ain't out here camping like regular people. You up to something? And then look at
a bow and arrow.
The story says 10 years ago, he served 3 years in juvenile center for shooting a woman with a crossbow.
Mm. Well, that's not good.
For possession of explosives.
Oh,
a good idea that they got a handle on this guy.
He was just getting ready for 4th of July with the explosives.
I think the world's a better place.
No. See, I knew once I really looked at him good, I had to get my phone out. I had to make a call. I got a call. Whatever 911 is in Germany, that would have been me. I would have been Dwight Howard's not wearing a mask. Like, that would have been me in that situation.
Well, I'll definitely be looking for more details on how they arrested him and apprehended him, because I've had the feeling, too, it wasn't the most peaceful of takedowns. So we'll see. We'll get more of that to you later on this week or this show.
Well, you know,
speaking of more information, this new song that's out right now, Entanglements, with August and Rick Ross. That's my jam. That's going to be my jam for the rest of the summer. You got to listen to it, fellas. They get it in. Entanglements. And they drop names. He's like, Will, Jada. Like, he's not even trying to pretend as if it's like about a random relationship. He's like, nah, y'all know what I'm talking about. I got entangled.
I mean, this is on purpose, right? And I'm not talking about the song. I'm talking about this story getting legs at this time. This is hey, we need some people to talk about us. Let's drop our entanglement story and see what happens next. This feels way too orchestrated.
Well, it is curious as to how this thing kind of unfolded, because it's not messy, even though it's a messy story. The unfolding of the story does seem choreographed and well planned out, but the story in and of itself is a messy story. with that being said, I too have my entanglement list. And now that I'm listening to the song, I'm trying to decide whether or not that list needs to be, you know, if I still need to have it, if I should just shred it.
Yeah, you should probably. Well, I'll leave that up to you. It's, we're about to come back. And I don't know. Is it radio friendly? Can we play it on the radio, LZ?
I don't know if they're going to play it on the radio. Jorge was trying to give us some bars. You're going to at least give us the beat. Give us a little beat because it's a good little song. I'm like, oh, okay, all right. I can see myself, you know, rolling through. Yeah. Okay.
Not bad.
Not bad. Here we go.
Yeah, get right to it.
Gotta be careful. Gotta be careful.
He jumped right off. He wasn't even slick with it. He just went straight to it, didn't he?
Come on, don't you guys have any sympathy for Will Smith? You guys gonna sit here and just listen to the jam and dance? And you know what that man's going through. You saw the tears in his eyes. Have you no heart?
No, not on that.
Neither of you.
No.
I mean. Listen,
Memes out of them now. Come on,
I try not to get up in grown folks' business. Mm-hmm. This is clearly grown folks' business that has some details in it that may or may not be true, but illuminates the situation regardless. And so I'm just going to say, I'm going to step over here to the side. I'm going to watch. I'm going to look. But I'm not going to get emotionally invested.
All right.
By the way, Will Smith face, though, when she said entanglement, it's so priceless.
The new Crane Jordan.
I can't. Yeah. It's so priceless.
Look, man, the whole thing feels like a put-on. It just feels like this incredible because to your point, if this was just, hey, look, this happened and now the world knows about it, you would be mortified and you just want to get the hell away from it and talk about anything but this. But then it's just kind of here as a thing that everybody's okay with, feels like a put on. It just doesn't feel like a real entanglement, shall we say.
It's so funny, man. I'm just like, Hollywood stuff, man. It's such an incestuous community. You know, and I understand why, obviously, you know, if people make X number of dollars and have X sort of life, then it only makes sense that those people will be together because they understand one another. I totally get it. But why you got to have your business in the streets? Why do I know about your entanglement? I shouldn't know about your entanglement. I'm intrigued. I'm not going to, like, not look, but I shouldn't know any of it. I don't know, man. It's crazy. I do have an entanglement list, though. I'm going to keep my little list to myself.
Did Travis drop? Oh, I'm no, I did, and I'm back. I made it back in.
Travis in an entanglement? That was fast.
The entanglement with my stupid phone. Yes, I am in an entanglement with that. All right, Ramona Shelburne is going to join us next. We'll talk to her about getting restarted inside that, but we'll get her thoughts too on the MVP conversation that we were having. That's all coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, we are getting closer to the restart of the NBA season. Joining us right now, ESPN NBA insider Ramona Shelburne checking in. Ramona, good morning. How are you?
What's up, Lloyd? How are you?
What's a happy birthday, boo?
Thank you. You know what? A 2020 birthday show is all right. You know?
What did you do?
2020. Quarantine birthday, right? Like, you know, my folks came over and they come over. You know, that's my socializes. My folks come over sometimes, right? And then my brother and my sister-in-law and their little baby came over and we had a little socially distant pool party. Right, so like eat some food and hop in the pool. It was good, you know, fun.
Good. Nice.
I mean,
nice. 40th nice.
Birthday party. I went to the Queen concert, and this my 41st birthday. We had a very small pool party.
Nice. You know?
Yeah. Good.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Yeah. Speaking of pool parties, Dwight Howard was the only one at his pool party. are we done with the shenanigans down there from him, or are we going to get more headlines? Because this has been fascinating.
Oh, I think we'll get more. I mean, they warned him about wearing his mask. Then he was on his live stream the other day, topping off about vaccines. And I mean, I don't know. Like, you know, there's certain characters, like if you're casting for the real world or you're casting for a reality TV show character, you find characters like Dwight because you know they're going to say some things. They're going to stir some things up. They're going to create some storylines. Like, whether he means to or not, this is going to happen. You just be ready for it.
Ramona, with that in mind, is this going to be kind of normal, not just for Dwight, but because guys have so much time down there and so little to do, that guys are going to get on social media or whatever, that we're going to have a story like this frequently?
I think so. You know, I mean, look, we all have our own relationship with Twitter, right? Or Instagram, whatever it is. But, like, you know, I generally tend to – I've gotten less into Twitter. I've gotten less into anything, you know, for the most part. I pretty much just like put up some pictures of me and Daniel on the gram. That's about.
Did we lose Ramona?
Did we lose Momo?
Okay. She just dropped right there. We'll try to get her back, but yeah. Doesn't it feel like that, LC, that Dwight, I mean, Dwight's Dwight. We all know what that means, but Dwight is not going to be the only one to do an Instagram live or whatever and say some stuff that make us all go say, what, what's going on over there? That this is just the first one, not the last one.
Yeah. It's just that because of his history and perception and the way that he was talked about in terms of being a teammate, I just would hate for him to squander all of the goodwill. I mean, I was in Chicago for the All-Star weekend, got a chance to see, you know, Dwight interact with his peers again, got the chance to see Dwight interact with the fans again. And it was like, you know, his second or third year in the league all over again. People were cheering for him. They loved him. You know, other players were giving him respect because they saw he was putting in work. And it was beautiful to just kind of witness the way that he was being treated after the way that he had been talked about just a few months prior. I mean, he was literally not in the league just a few months prior. And I would hate to see that it get eroded by some, you know, random tweet or IG post or going to the wrong pool party by yourself.
All right, Ramona's back on with us here. Ramona, let's go to this. We know that Frank Vogel was making the case about LeBron as MVP and the fact that they won those games against the Clippers and against the Bucks before we shut the whole thing down. And LZ and I were talking this morning, and I was trying to make the case that because everything's just so up in the air and weird this season, why not kind of change the rules and have this quarantine period, including the playoffs, count towards the MVP? Where do you come out on that?
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that. You know, I think there's some sense that, like, because not all 30 teams are playing, it's not fair to have these games count. That's I think their logic. When I, you know, asked around, like, hey, what's with this? But you know, theoretically, the bottom eight teams probably aren't going to be a part of this, right? Like, theoretically, the bottom eight teams aren't going to, you're not going to be voting for them for MVP. Or any of the big awards. I mean, I suppose there could be some, you know, people on the all-rookie team that are on the bottom 18, but other than that, it's really not going to affect things. So, yeah, I was a little surprised. And also, like, I haven't gotten a note from the NBA about, I'm a voter, and, you know, I know that they normally send out our ballots pretty soon. So, I haven't gotten that, and usually you have a little while to fill it out. So I'm curious about the logistics of this. Are we going to have our ballots before these games start on the 30th? Are they going to get the ballots to us in time so that, or are they going to give us the ballots and then we're going to vote while those eight games are playing? And theoretically, those eight games shouldn't factor into what you're doing, but if we don't have to vote, if the votes don't have to be in by the time they start, how can you not factor those eight games in? Like, you're going to see what starts to happen. So I don't know. The logistics of this is going to be interesting. You know, I personally think it should all count. Like, I thought when the season stopped, you know, I've kind of been on the, you know, LeBron MVP train most of the season. I think he has. I know Giannis has a compelling case, and statistically, you look at it, and Giannis probably wins out, but. Like, I've always, like, all season long, I think the way LeBron has turned the franchise around, the fact that he's leading the league in assists at age 35, you know, in the position that he plays,
how much load he carries. Like, that to me was what pushed that over the top. I'll probably vote for Giannis for Defensive Player of the Year, but I'm pretty sure I'm in the minority on that, guys. Like, when they take the straw polls of media members, like, it tends to be Giannis running away with this thing. It's going to be maybe 80% Giannis, 20% LeBron. But, you know, let's see what happens in those last eight games. That would be interesting to see how this finishes out before we vote.
And when you go to ESPN.com, Ramona, and you look at the tally amongst our colleagues, you know, Giannis is running away. I think he's got like 17 MVP votes compared to 3 from LeBron. Sedona was one of those who voted for LeBron. The only matchup that I see here in terms of real conversations as it pertains to L.A. is about whether or not, you know, Brandon is really most improved and whether or not Frank Vogel should get more respect as coach of the year. I think the LeBron versus Giannis conversation, that ship has sailed. But I think there's still room to talk about whether or not B.I. blossomed into, like, the best improved player and whether or not Frank Vogel's coaching performance is being overlooked because he has LeBron.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's a great question because, like, you know, I don't think he's going to – I don't think Frank Vogel's going to get the coach of the year. I think there's a lot of other coaches are going to be, you know, voting – you know, you're ahead of him, right? And I think that's fine with Frank. Like, he's not the kind of guy who gets upset about things like that. But, I mean, look, you know, I think Nick Nurse is probably going to be a really strong contender. And you look at – you have the Raptors, who are second in the East, you know, defending champs, who've done all that without LeBron James – or, sorry, without Kawhi Leonard from this year. I mean, that's a pretty compelling case. I think what happens when you have LeBron on your team is you tend to get all the blame but none of the credit because he's so good that people don't necessarily factor that into your coaching job. They just think, oh, you have LeBron. But clearly you should get some of the credit because it didn't work last year with Luke Walton. You know, it's not just like, you know, get LeBron and turn things around. So, yeah, like I don't even know if Frank's going to get that many votes just simply based on some of the other candidates out there. But he should be at least appreciated, which is so crazy.
Ramona and Travis, because if you know that he came in and people started joking that he's gonna be replaced by Jason Kidd before the end of the season,
he was given his staff before he was given the job. I mean, it kind of brings me to the other thing I want to ask you, Ramona, is that it just feels like a lifetime ago. The beginning of the NBA season when the Lakers, when Magic went on TV and did what he did, and it just felt like the Lakers were in complete chaos. Fast forward to where we are now, they're number one seed. We're talking about coach of the year. We're talking about an MVP candidate, LeBron, talking about a DPOY guy in Anthony Davis. Was the chaos overblown at the beginning, or have they done that good of a job of tamping it down and getting to where they've gotten to?
I mean, they've been that good at keeping everyone on message, you know, like on message. They've been, like, to me, covering the Lakers this year is an interesting task because they don't do anything. They have, everything is press conference. Everything is kind of on message. Everything is pretty, I don't want to say chill, but it's very, like, nobody steps out. Even when they have a potentially good story, they worry about somebody might say something that distracts and somebody gets upset about it. And on the one hand, it's frustrating when you cover a team like that, right? Like, you know, I'm used to covering the Warriors where they let you have one-on-ones with players all the time. They're always trying to, you know, get good stories and get them out there. But, you know, the Lakers have a very different attitude towards the media. I think a lot of it is very controlled and very on message. Nobody steps out and does much. But maybe that's what they needed after everything. You know, that's more frustrating for us, right? And, you know, in the media, but fans don't care. They're happy the teams are winning, and they don't really care if they're seeing extra fluffy features, you know, on the players. So, I mean, think about this. Like, the Lakers have been embroiled in some major storylines this year. You know, starting off the year in China with the Daryl Morey situation where they fly over there and, you know, they're kind of caught in the middle of this political back and forth between the United States and China and the NBA. I mean, that, and, you know, they're just sitting there in the hotel. they somehow escaped out of there. You know, they got out of that situation with a few bad headlines. Yes, like LeBron's comment, I thought afterwards, you know, sparked a lot of controversy. But other than that, that's about the only misstep people have made this year. And that, considering what they've been through this year, that's unbelievable to me.
Yeah, and Frank deserves a lot more credit for being able to keep that ship on the steady. And I agree with you. You know, having been around the Lakers this year, well, just generally speaking, but this year in particular, I've written several pieces, and they are very, very careful with who they give and how much time you have, and then the overseeing of the messaging and the conversations that are happening, because they don't want to have a similar sort of image nationally that they had a year ago or when Magic Johnson up and quit unexpectedly and people were trashing them. I totally get that. But I think that method is also unfortunately overshadowing the performances of the coaching staff and then Frank Vogel's hold on that. And I feel bad because Nick Nurse deserves a lot of credit, absolutely. But he also inherited a team that had won 60 games, and people keep forgetting that was a 60-win team with Dwayne Casey before Nick Nurse even showed up.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I could name you a few more teams. Like, I think that, you know, Taylor Jenkins in Memphis is going to get some votes. He's done a really good job. I think Nick Nurse, Billy Donovan, Oklahoma City, after, you know, they lose Paul George, et cetera. Like, there's just a lot of coaches who have those stories. That, who, generally speaking, the coach of the year is a narrative. It's going to be the team that you didn't expect to win at all, the team that you thought was going to, you know, be a bad team, and they have a surprising year. Well, that doesn't exactly fit Frank Vogel, right? We didn't think they were going to have a bad year. We weren't sure, but they do have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, so people were pretty confident they'd have a good year. That's discounting all of the management that he has done, the way that he is, you know, to manage all those egos, all of these stakes that he's got to manage. Like, I don't think he gets enough credit for that. And some of it is just like, you know, nobody can point to like that one adjustment that he made or the decisions they made about how they're going to run the defense or how they're going to run the offense with LeBron. Or like, there's been just really no specifics that you could hang your hat on. And I think that's probably why we're not seeing his name even tossed out there in the candidate. Like he might get some third place votes. You know, he might get a few.
He should get more than that. I mean, he's put together an amazing season for that team. Despite, you're right, Mona, the lack of narrative isn't helping, but just the results and the expectations coming into it, the fire that was going on was nuts. Ramona Shelburne joining us here on The Morning Show. Ramona, thanks for checking in. We'll talk to you soon. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thanks,
happy birthday.
You got it. LZ, I want to continue that conversation because she's right that the lack of narrative isn't there if the only narrative we're looking for is, hey, they weren't supposed to be good, and they are. But there's a very powerful one with the Lakers and the coaching that they've done this season. We'll tell you what it is next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. See, I liked what Ramona was saying about that Frank Vogel will not get a ton of Coach of the Year award votes because the narrative isn't there, the traditional narrative. And that is that a team comes in with somewhere between no to modest expectations and they far exceed those expectations. Or maybe you lose your star player or an injury and you keep kind of just powering through it and you put together an amazing season. That is the traditional narrative. Or a new coach shows up in a new place and takes a team that wasn't very good and all of a sudden puts them into the postseason. That's fine, and that's not without value. But how about this for a narrative? How about you're the head coach of a team that really wasn't super gung-ho to get you in the first place, that they very publicly flirted with some other coaches and were unable to get it done. They have an assistant coach on the staff that was there before you were hired and told, oh, he's going to be here. You don't get to replace him or not. He is going to sit there right next to you. He's coming in as one of the most popular players in the history of the league, one of the most popular players in the history of the franchise, one of the most popular, well-liked, famous men in the history of Los Angeles, goes on TV and describes an incredible level of dysfunction inside your organization, and the whole thing is just a mess. Now, oh, by the way, we're going to go to China to start some of these games, the preseason, but right before we get there, an executive from another team lights a match and creates this entire problem with human rights on the other side of the world that we're just going over there to play some basketball. I got to deal with that. We're not even going to play. We're going to turn around and come back home before this whole thing happens. And yes, I understand you've got LeBron James and Anthony Davis, two of the best players in the whole league. But if you think coaching those guys is easy, go ask the guys in New Orleans and go ask Luke Walton from a year ago coaching LeBron James. Just having great players is not enough. You need them for sure. They absolutely have to be there, but you need to do it. And now let's go through the entire season and not have a single meaningful hiccup. How's that for a narrative?
I mean, it sounds pretty fantastic. And especially since what your narrative is full of facts and context, and it's not abbreviated or misrepresented facts. And this is what I'm talking about. I know a lot of people get sick when I'm harping on details and reminding people of details of what happened. Well, those things are important because if you don't remember what really happened, you might misconstrue what you're looking at. So if you take Nick Nurse, for instance, right? He's doing a fantastic job. A fantastic job. Not taking anything away from him. But let's keep it 100 for a second. The guy right before him had just won Coach of the Year. The guy right before him had just guided him to about a 60-win season without Kawhi. Remember? That was without Kawhi.
Sure.
Not DeMar DeRozan.
Of course.
But it was without Kawhi. That's what Dwayne Casey had done literally months before Nick Nurse took over the franchise. Now, clearly, Nick Nurse has done some great things, and he obviously won a chip with Kawhi. And post-Kawhi, he has managed to continue growing with his squad. You know, Siakam has become an all-star. I get all of that, and I'm not trying to take anything away from that. But he landed in a made situation the way that Kevin Durant went to a made situation. That doesn't take away Kevin Durant's greatness, and it doesn't take away what Nick Nurse has done as a coach. But let's keep the context real. Frank Vogel did not come to a made situation. I don't think it was a dumpster fire, but I smelled a whole lot of smoke.
Yeah.
They didn't want him, to your point. They hadn't been to the postseason, let alone the finals. They were like light years away from a 60-win season. So I understand the tendency to want to look at what Nick Nurse has done and go, oh, my God, he's doing all this. Right? But you got to remember what he arrived in. A great situation with a team that just won 60 damn games.
Yeah.
Frank Vogel inherited Lonzo Ball.
Look, there's two ways to look at this, right? You can look at it as, and look, he hasn't had any moments. He hasn't had to overcome the loss of LeBron or Anthony Davis or something like that. That it hasn't, oh, the Lakers were reeling, and then Frank Vogel did this. The lack of moment to point to. Okay, that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is there haven't been any moments. That this man has navigated this incredibly complex landscape. You know what we haven't even mentioned, LZ, neither one of us? Kobe's death. If you don't think that affected the organization as well, that's a whole nother thing that took place in the middle of it. And obviously it hit the entire NBA hard, but it certainly hit the Lakers harder than anybody else. This is another thing that could have derailed this team or sent them into a tailspin or put them into a funk or whatever it might have been. And it didn't. That they got through it as well as anybody could ask them to get through something as awful as that was. And so it's the lack of moments. It's not that, oh, the team's blowing up. It's that this man showed up and has just had smooth sailing the whole way. And not because he got lucky, but because he navigated that ship through really tricky waters and came out the other side. And they're a number one seed heading into the playoffs and a favorite to win a championship. If that's not doing your job as well as anybody else, I don't know what is.
Exactly. And I'm not being a homer here when I say he's being overlooked and disrespected in a lot of ways. Because he is. He just is. Again, it's important to remember, this is his first season. It's important to remember all the other external factors he had to negotiate with his squad from China, as Ramona mentioned, all the way through the passing of Kobe, through the fact that, you know, a good chunk of the roster hadn't played together as a team yet, in addition to the fact that you had all the media noise still about the departure of Magic Johnson, the hiring of Rob Pelinka, And of course, the looming shadow of LeBron James and the pressure that that brings. And if you don't think that pressure is real, ask David Blatt what's his like to get a team to the finals and then get fired because you're not good enough.
Right.
So I don't think we're giving Frank Vogel enough credit here.
No, I don't think so either. He's been fantastic all season long with more thrown at him than anybody could ever have imagined coming into it. Andy Kamenetsky is in for George. He's going to join us next for Crosstalk. That's coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, Sedano Show is coming up next. Andy Kamenetsky is going to be filling in for George today. Hey, what's going on, Andy? How you been?
Good, man. It's good to hear both your voices. It's been a while since we've all seen each other, man.
It has been a while.
Dinner on Saturday night.
Yeah, no, that.
Yeah,
that
we're making Keyshawn pay for everything.
I was going to say, I wanted to ask you guys about this right from the jump. And, you know, Key's a generous guy, and I imagine this was his idea, and he spearheaded it, and he wanted to do this as a way of saying thank you to a bunch of people that mean a lot to him, and he was happy to pay for it. Who was really most into the idea of, okay, Key's paying for this, so I'm going to take advantage? Like, I'm going to jump at the idea of this being a huge bill, and I know I'm not paying for it.
Well, let's see. It crossed my mind around the third to fourth bottle of wine when I realized I actually had no idea how much these bottles of wine were, but I was drinking as if it was at a comfortable price point, even though it wasn't my price point.
Yeah, to put it to you this way, the bottles of wine that kept coming out were the bottles of wine that they keep locked up at the grocery store. Okay, these are not something that you're pulling off the bottom shelf. These are really nice bottles of wine. And LZ, like you, after the second bottle, I'm like, are we being bad guys here? But then by the second bottle, I wasn't making any great decisions anyway. So the third bottle was great. The fourth bottle was great. And then after that, I'm not quite sure what happened.
Yeah, I imagine with each bottle, it just starts becoming an easier and easier to rationalize your behavior.
At some point. That's basically it. That is basically
They were like, you know, like fried chicken wings at the bar. You know, you may hesitate in the first couple, but then after a while, you're just going to eat the whole doggone basket. And that's just what I did. I just kept going in.
Well, all of this is to say congratulations to Key on the on his new deal and the setup.
Oh, I thought you were going to say congratulations to us for drinking six bottles of wine. But that
no, I mean, looking at the people in that photo, frankly, it's what I expected. If anything, I'm six bottles is a bit of a letdown, unless there was a little more liquor, you know, that just didn't end up in some of the photos.
I'll let you tell the story, LZ.
Well, I was just going to say, I got there late, right? So I get there, the wait person comes to me, asks for my drink order, and I immediately order a dirty martini. Wasn't aware that Travis was also in the same space. So he and I started off right up the gate, straight martinis, bam, let's get it done. Like, we ain't got time for no mixers. We're going straight liquor, and we're going to go ahead and just get our liver fired up for what's about to happen.
Well, and we succeeded.
The old saying goes, liquor than wine, you'll be fine.
There you go. All right, Andy, you have not done a snake draft with us. So I'm going to read you the two teams that we drafted. The topic today was our favorite sport movies / sports documentaries. So here is Team A is Rocky, mm-hmm. When We Were Kings, mm-hmm. Kobe Doing Work, and The Last Dance. Mm-hmm. And Team B is Bull Durham.
You cut out for a sec.
So the last one on Team A, it was The Last Dance, the Jordan doc.
Okay.
And then the second team is Bull Durham, Any Given Sunday, Bad News Bears, and I, Tonya.
I think it's B. I think it's Team B.
Because?
Well, you're wrong. America agrees with me. America agrees with me by a large margin. I can't even believe you're going to turn your back on Rocky. Wow.
Well, the reason here's what it is I think Team A, Rocky is the quintessential sports movie. There's no question. I think it's the no-brainer first overall pick. And When We Were Kings is one of the best documentaries I've ever seen, much less sports. I think doing work was overdrafted at that point. I got to be honest, that feels like a bit of a reach. And I love the inclusion of iTanya.
Thank you,
on
Andy.
Team B. Just like the warped psychology and to actually bring a team in like that. Plus, let's be honest, Travis needs some help in these snake drafts. I'm trying to throw the guy a bone because I was aware who picked which. I just wanted to help the poor guy out.
Okay. So
I feel less good. I was about to say something nice about you, Andy. You and I are both curating these very select lists, and not that everybody doesn't
well,
come with
here's
us.
The other thing. I will say for real, Any Given Sunday, I actually think is an underrated movie. When I first saw it, I did not realize how on point and ahead of the conversation about the NFL it was. And you look at it now, the way it was talking about stuff like non-guaranteed contracts and health issues, concussions, the role of the black quarterback in football, way ahead of the conversations we were having.
And Jack Rose. Let's not forget about Jack Rose, who was a great send-up of my former employer. So that was absolutely going to be on my list. There's no way I was skipping that.
I am so confused. When did I become the villain? Is it because I'm so dominant? Am I now at the Lakers?
You will send pictures to Janice.
Because I got so many chips.
You know what? We're LZ. Here? You know how there's always that debate about whether or not fans get bored with dynasties? We're bored with your snake draft dynasties, man.
The people are. He's still kicking my ass in the voting.
I'm glad
I got your vote, Andy.
The media, though, like this is your Derrick Rose 2011 MVP.
Well, hopefully I don't have multiple career-altering injuries along the way. Very quickly, before I know we're coming up against it, Frank Vogel, coach of the year, in your estimation, in the NBA?
He's definitely in that conversation. I mean, he is on the shortest of short lists when you talk about guys who are viable candidates. Like, I know Nick Nurse is hard in that conversation. I think he deserves it as well. But when you look at what Frank Vogel's done and all the different factors that he had to juggle, he's done a phenomenal job. He's been terrific.
All right, Andy's in for George. The Sedona Show is coming up next. LZ and I'll see you tomorrow morning. Sex of the Morning Show, 7:10 ESPN.